Ball. And the Pointer men's basketball team advanced last night as they beat Marion University 66-64. They'll take on Central of Iowa today down at Quant Fieldhouse. That's news. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News Station, WSAU.
News and weather, on air and online at WSAU.com. From AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Weather is brought to you by the Colby Gallery. Now through the end of March, take 11% off the cost of your new energy-efficient Latitude vinyl windows from the Colby Gallery. Call 888-995-0995.
Mostly sunny conditions expected, highs near 26 degrees in the afternoon. Wind should be light from the northwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Warmer temperatures for the second half of the weekend. A high of 37 expected Sunday with partly sunny conditions. And check this, 42 is the forecast high for Monday afternoon. Get out there and enjoy it with partly cloudy conditions expected. Colder air returns by Tuesday and also a mix of rain to snow likely in the afternoon as well. Highs near 35 degrees. Colder on Wednesday, a high of 25 under partly cloudy conditions. Little warmer on Thursday, back near 30 in the afternoon with mostly cloudy conditions. And more of the same come Friday, a mostly cloudy sky with highs near 33 degrees in the afternoon. Have a great weekend. I'm Newsline 9 meteorologist Rob Duns right here on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
All over America, people are taking the National Radon Test. Have you? Excuse me, have you heard of radon?
Is that a gas?
Is it something that comes up out the ground or something?
Well, it's like poison gas.
Something dangerous that you're supposed to check on to make sure it's not in your home.
Now it's your turn. Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True. Radon is a radioactive gas. True or false? The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
True, I didn't know that.
Radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. Answer true or false. Homes with radon problems can be fixed. True. Homes with radon problems can be fixed.
So what do you do about it? I'm going to dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
If I don't take care of it, nobody else will.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
It's Practical Polly Radio. I've switched to cooking with healthier oils. So now what do I do with all these tubs of lard? Skinny jeans feeling too tight? A bit of lard on your hips and thighs and those pants slide on like a dream. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take a deep breath in and let go of the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you hit that piñata into your neighbor's yard. Let it go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
It would help if I turned my mic on. There we go. Good morning. And welcome to Saturday in the Studio. I'm Tom King. Thanks for joining us here this morning.
Hi.
And we're here with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Hi, Merle. What's up?
Hi there. Oh, now you can hear me. Hey,
yeah.
Here we go. We're here for another beautiful day.
715-845-2155. If people have financial questions, you're the guy to talk to, right?
Well, that's what they tell me.
Mm.
The beautiful part about having your own program is you get to be your own expert.
And, yes.
According to me, I'm the world's greatest everything.
All right, well, and the best-looking man on radio is what you
well,
always say,
no
right?
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
Yeah, I look at the reflection inside of my iPad here, and I look up here, and I'm like, God, I can't wait till tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
I get better looking every day.
There we go. What? Where are we going to start today? What are we going to talk about?
You know, in a word here, can I say Putin? Putin.
Or Putin.
Or Putin.
Depending on how you want to pronounce it.
Well,
it
depends upon the angle, I guess. Sometimes it's a Putin.
Even the financial markets are roiled up and awaiting what's going to happen in the Ukraine, correct?
And you know what's happening inside of the Ukraine is really having taken up all the news. If we look at the news that's happened inside of the marketplace from an investment standpoint, it continues to point, at least in my opinion and in the opinion of Fed Chairman Yellen, which she's a whole heck of a lot smarter than I am, folks. It appears as though that the weather has still had a problem with the economic numbers. So a lot of the economic numbers that's coming out, people are looking at it and saying, well, they're not quite right because of what's happened with the polar vortex effect.
Especially in the eastern part of the U.S., just the spending wasn't there for the last few months.
Well, you know what? Not only there, but the Chicago area, too.
Yeah.
You know, two great big areas.
Yeah.
And so the spending isn't there. We're looking at our domestic spend. I'm sorry, not our domestic spending, our consumer staples, our durable goods, and these sort of things are all kind of down. So the economic numbers aren't making a lot of sense. We look at the numbers, we see job market numbers come up again. And pretty much across the board, mining, logging, construction, wholesale, all personal activities, professional finances, education services, leisure hospitality, government, all up as far as additional jobs go. The parts that are down, transportation and warehousing, weather, information. I'm not sure why that one's down, but that's down as well, certainly as you might expect, retail trade. Even with that, we had an unexpectedly large number of 175,000 jobs created inside of February, despite what the harsh winter weather is saying. So suggesting that the economy has not slowed as much as recent people have said. So with that, we find at least that the market continues to keep growing. We find this support inside of the profitability corporations. Profitability is holding up what the stock prices are. And so as we continue to keep coming along here, the economy continues to keep chugging along and moving. That being said, then, we see all the information and articles popping up and saying, well, coming up here this next week, we're going to have the 5-year anniversary of this bull market, and does it really matter? Are we overpriced? Are we waiting for a bubble to burst? And so that's what's consuming all the news that's out there. And for every one article that you think is great, two more stink. So there's a lot of news that's out there flying around at this particular point in time.
Well, people are seeing those information articles and things that suggest that we are at a market top, that the bubble is going to burst, that we're going to come back to a bear market. How do you respond to those, and what do you suggest people do when they see and hear articles like that?
You know, there's a number of things we can do, and there's an article that's out here I'm going to reference and talk about the article by Mark Holbert, who we tend to use quite a bit. We should probably get a hold of Mark sometime.
He'd probably want to get paid, you know.
Yeah, well, heck with that. We'll just thank him. We'll just send him a card or something.
Yeah.
Maybe we can send him, like, some jellies and a candle.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Okay.
Some hot bath oils, maybe. How about some bath beads? That's popular.
Is it still?
With the salts or something? Well, anyway. In here, we take a look at what do we have to look at. You know, eventually, folks, there's going to be a bear market. A bear market is essentially a negative year in the marketplace. We're going to have one of those coming up. There's no doubt about it. The question is what are we doing to make sure that we're going to be okay during that period of time? Inside of this article, he touches upon a number of things that we certainly would recommend and chat about. And, you know, going through and talking about diversification, making sure we're diversified. And some of the big stuff is to make sure you're diversified not only within the U.S., but globally as well. We've talked about that diversification on this program, and let's touch upon that just a little bit. You know, folks, with modern portfolio theory tells us that we need to make sure that if we're invested inside of the U.S., that we're diversified in multiple asset classes, which means we need to have small company stocks, medium company stocks, large company stocks, and we have to have both the growth and the value orientations, which is simply this. A stock that somebody thinks is value-oriented, somebody thinks is on sale. Maybe it's me, maybe it's Tom, maybe it's a portfolio manager, maybe it's you, but somebody thinks that stock is worth less than what it should be because of something that happened or something that's going to go on. The other side of that same coin for an individual stock would be a growth stock. And a growth stock is a stock that somebody sees because of the actions of the company, that they're going to see some sustained future growth into the future because of some decisions they're making. And a classic case in here was a few years ago. Walmart wanted to put some 11,000 stores inside of China, so people thought that would be a great idea. It helped to boost the profitability and the stock growth of Walmart. So in that, we need to have that diversification in a portfolio. The question becomes, is should we have that diversification if we're 90 years old? And the answer is yes. But what percentage of the overall total should be in the stock market when we're 90? That's, of course, up for discussion. You know, should a person 90 years old have stock in their portfolio? My opinion would be yes. Why? Because we don't know if they're going to live to be 120 and we still have 30 years to go.
Yeah.
So with it, we still need to have that, but what percentage of the overall portfolio we should have? But that's our diversification. The backbone of modern portfolio theory is having those different investments inside of our portfolio gives us a hopefully to find that best rate of return for the least amount of risk, and we haven't talked about the bond side of things at this point in time. Now, in doing so, if we have individual stocks, we can certainly do so. But it's usually easier for us as individuals to make sure that we're using mutual funds, for example, inside of our 401k or if we have variable annuities. It's easier to use mutual funds or inside of our IRAs than trying to pick individual stocks. So individual stocks, you really need about a dozen of them to be able to do it right. So with that diversification, then we now can look around and say, you know what, if the U.S. Dow goes down, remember the Dow is only 30 stocks, but if we're diversified between multiple different sectors, will that lessen the blow? In theory, the answer is yes. In practicality, the answer is yes, but of course, there's no guarantee what's going to happen in the future. Additionally, folks, we have to make sure that we're diversified and have some investments around the rest of the world. Typically, though there's certainly some studies that point that this negative correlation is narrowing or coming to be that more the same, is that if the U.S. is going down, typically you see the international markets going up. Currently, right now, you're seeing a lot of the international marketplaces going down, and the U.S., of course, is going up, the opposite. So if we have investments diversified, not only in the U.S., but on the outside as well, that diversification for us will, of course, help dampen the blow if the U.S. goes down, because in theory, the international marketplaces are going up, and that back and forth gives us, again, that best rate of return for the least amount of risk. What we find, and again, this is was really pointed out very well inside of Mark Hulbert's article here, and this is the article, folks, called How to Prepare for the Next Bear Market. But in here, they talk about how we tend to get overexcited about a market when it's going up. For example, right now, there's a huge amount of money coming from you and I, the small investors, going into the marketplace because we just saw what happened over the course of the last 2 years. We can see it in our office, too. People are all excited and say, well, I want to get this money invested. But you know what? We're coming into a five-year inside of the bear market, which I don't think is bad. I think we still have some time to go. All the economic numbers point that we're still going to be okay here coming ahead in the marketplace for a while. Will we for 3 or 5 years? I don't know the answer to that, but I think we're still pretty good for the next year. Even Jim Cramer on CNBC says, you know what? He says, I don't see anything that's going to predict the down market at this particular point in time. Sure, we're going to go up and down and bounce around, but I'm not yelling jump out, and he tends to be a fairly good indicator of this stuff. He's not a guru. They hadn't given him a fancy hat or anything. But
okay.
We have to make sure we have that diversification. We have to make sure we have it spread around. We have to make sure we have it in multiple areas and so forth. And so this is a great article. I mean, he goes into some 90 years worth of research that he did on the inside. And I appreciate him as a person who writes because he actually puts the information behind. He just doesn't throw a bunch of mindless dribble out there. He actually puts some education and some numbers behind it. Unlike a few other articles I got here this morning, folks, that were just, oh, my goodness, it's horrible.
All right, 715-845-2155. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. Phone lines are open. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call here this morning. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs.
And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band?
Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
When you were a little kid and you thought about what you wanted to be, teaching was at the top of your list. But things changed. And as you got older, teaching didn't seem like the best option anymore. So you're thinking you'll be something else. But what would your 12-year-old self say? Now you want to be a doctor. You don't think teachers save lives? 25 at a time. An actress? Try playing a different role every time the bell rings. How about a scientist? Ever heard of physics? Chemistry? Who do you think teaches that? Teachers today are breaking down obstacles, finding innovative ways to instill old lessons, and taking learning far beyond the four walls of the classroom. It's time to recognize that great things are happening in teaching and put it back on your list. Don't try to convince yourself otherwise. You had it right the first time.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
that was a joke.
Oh.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. I'm taking your financial questions, 715-845-2155. Or a couple other things you wanted to touch on from that Mark Hulbert article, right?
I do want to touch upon his article a few more things. And again, this is an article from MarketWatch.com, Mark Hulbert, How to Prepare for the Next Bear Market. You know, the market will go down, folks, and on average, coming from the research that's in here from Mark Hulbert, since 1926 to date, it's taken approximately 3.3 years of the stock market to go back up to suppress the high set before the typical bear market year. So if we take a look at what's happened, say, that in the 90s, it took about 3 years to make that money back, et cetera, it happens time and time again, with exception of two times, which is the crash of 1929 and the crash of 2008 that went down. Both of those, of course, were very in-depth crashes, interestingly enough, all sparked by the same financial or accounting move. But that being the case, it took longer to come back. But those folks, of course, that had money in 2007, had it go down throughout the course of 2008, certainly those that remained inside of the marketplace are back up again once you're diversified. From that then, investing is like a waltz we've talked about so many times in here. Two steps forward, one step back seems to be the theme. I don't know about you, Tom. I'm fairly good at dancing. I can do a waltz because I can count to three fairly good repeatedly.
Yeah.
But in the stock market, it's that way. So do stock markets go down? Yes. Do we have to be diversified? Absolutely we do. We have to make sure we're diversified. So can't just jump into the marketplace and just start going crazy.
Well, when you look back, at those two major crashes, 29 and, mm-hmm. and 2008, a lot of what happened, a lot of the people who got caught up in that, it was because you saw stories and heard stories over and over again. Oh, this market is going to keep going up. There's no problem. It's going to keep going up. You don't want to get out now. It's going to keep going up. Well, it'll keep going up until the day that it doesn't, and then all of a sudden you're caught.
Yeah.
The idea is to not get caught in that situation.
Exactly. The thing is that, okay, the market is going to go down.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure that you know what's going to happen and what you're going to do, and your plan is when it's going to go down. You know, do you take all the money out of the marketplace now? I don't know that necessarily seems unreasonable, but if you can't sleep at night, it may seem reasonable for you. But the thing we have to make sure is that we're not just simply saying, well, let's going to get back into the marketplace without having some sort of a safety net or a plan. You know, folks, during the break here, Tom and I were discussing, he says, you know, what happened with all the people that retired in 2007 and 2008, and then the market came crashing down in October of 2008, of course, and started going down. What happened with that? You know, well, it depends upon what it is. We have a fair number of clients that retired those years. Remember, those were peak years in the economy. And in the peak years inside of the economy and the marketplace at that point in time, people are making money and jumping out and saying, hey, I'm going to retire. But this is the point in time where we start saying, what can we do to put some guarantees inside of our portfolio? You know, we have to look at some of those questions. You know, for example, I know that I can go out and buy a good quality municipal bond right now, and I can buy a good quality municipal bond that's going to have a guaranteed principal and interest rate if I buy the insurance that goes along with it inside of the municipal bond marketplace. I know that I can do that. I know that I can use some investment products, such as annuities or the place, where I can have a guaranteed income stream. Now, do I put all my money there? Well, no, probably not, because you put all your money there, it ties up, and you can't, you know, use it for different things. But it becomes another tool that I have used. So if I have any worries that the stock market is going to come crashing down right now, you don't necessarily just come running out and try to bet and guess the marketplace, which, by the way, if you're trying to time the market, you're only right about 2% of the time. So, folks, you'd have to be really good to do that on your own. But we have to make sure that our portfolio is diversified so that we can weather the storm and weather the bumps. And this is the thing that Mark Holberg talks about inside of this article. So very clearly, and put some examples behind it. And I strongly recommend that you go through and start reading and looking at the article. Now, even that with the 2008 bear market, it took us about 5.3 years to come back. And the Dow, when it adjusted, so it's measured the same way it is now, 1929, if you take a look at the Dow adjusted as it is today, putting inflation, putting deflation that actually happened in that period of time and dividends back in, took about 7 years, even the depth that we were at that point in time.
We saw a day this week, and I can't remember which day it was, Tuesday or Wednesday, I think, where the market had a great day. I think the Dow was up a record. The S&P 500 was up for a record amount.
Yeah, it was
amount.
On Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. And the NASDAQ saw a huge bump. So does that do all of these things equate equally when it comes to the two different stock exchanges?
They never really equate equally. You'll tend to see them moving more in tandem more times than not. But what's interesting is we all remember the great gain that happened on Tuesday, but we went down 150 on Monday.
Yeah.
And you know, we just basically make it back. So the week, though we were up, wasn't as exciting as you might possibly believe. But, you know, as we look at this sort of stuff, you know, the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, and Dow are very specific different things. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, and most people are always surprised to hear about this, is only 30 stocks. That's it. Of course, those 30 stocks have a GDP, or their sales is bigger than, I believe it's about two-thirds of the world's country's gross domestic product. These businesses sell more than that in a year. So they're just enormously huge companies. This is the old blue chip, large, tried and true types of firms. But the S&P 500 has got a real broad spectrum of small, medium, large growth companies across, and that's what they call it, the breadth of America. Because typically what's happening inside of the S&P 500, they say, is where you can kind of take a pulse and take a measure of what's going on inside of the country and what's happening. You know, all-time record highs. Does it look like that's going to come crashing down? There's nothing supporting it. No, it really doesn't. The profitability that's coming up, and as we're coming to a quarter end here by the end of this month, as we come into April, we'll start seeing whether or not those profits are holding up in corporate America. And so far the estimates are is that they are. So as the stock price is going up, so are the profits behind the company and holding up the stock price. NASDAQ tends to be where you have a lot of your technology-driven companies, you know, your information, your computer services, your that type of information. You're going to find that stuff inside of the NASDAQ. So they're all going to kind of move in unison as you're having your growth economy, but they're all going to give you a little bit of indicators of pointers on where the economy is actually growing, and that in itself is good. And then I think the best indicator in the world is the Merle Kelch indicator.
And what would that be?
Well, this really means nothing other than the fact that I like talking to my clients that dig holes and do electrical and doing plumbing. I like to know what those guys are doing because when they're working hard, we tend to see everything else working pretty good inside of the economy. And I don't know if it's any sort of indicator, but it's a conversation I get to have with those clients several times a year. And so when they're digging holes and they're
so the construction
electrical work,
the construction guys are the canaries in the coal mine when it comes to the Merle Kelch.
You know it, and I don't think I've ever been wrong in that. I can usually have a pretty good indication of what's going on. When you start seeing the guys that are building windows saying we're not building any windows, and the guys in the holes are saying well we're not digging any holes, there's something going to be tough someplace, and they're all going gangbusters at the moment, folks.
All right, 715-845-2155. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. We've got some news on the way. We'll find out more about that Malaysia airliner that disappeared and more coming up here on WSAU.
Hey, America. We need to have a little talk. We've got more food in our country than we know what to do with. food at the grocery store and food in the vending machines, fast food, health food, and seafood. We've got so much food that anything people don't buy, we just throw out. Yet 17 million kids in America struggle with hunger. That ain't right. Luckily, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks has volunteers gathering excess food and getting it to hungry kids. They're kind of like food angels. Yeah, I made that up. It's kind of catchy. Hello, people. This isn't rocket science. We could solve hunger today. To start, become a food angel yourself by supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. We can't do it without your help.
To help solve hunger in central Wisconsin, contact Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin or visit feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9. WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. Two Vietnamese jets searching for a missing Malaysia Airlines plane have spotted some oil slicks as long as 12 miles that it's suspected that they came from the missing plane. About 239 people are believed to have been on that flight when it took off from Kuala Lumpur, headed for Beijing. Family and friends are hoping for news as they wait at the Beijing airport. Fox News Radio's David Piper has more from Bangkok, Thailand.
Contact was lost with the aircraft 2 hours into its flight. The route is over the South China Sea near the coast of Vietnam during that time. And the government's website says the plane went off the radar south of Vietnam. Now, weather along that route was reported to be good at that time. The Boeing 777-200 is a long-range aircraft powered by two engines and was introduced in 1995. It's in service with many airlines around the world and it has a good safety record. Malaysian Airlines, too, has a very good safety record.
A senior official at the State Department confirms at least three Americans were on that flight. The man driving when his car broke through the ice, killing his passenger, is going to prison. 32-year-old William Bowden of Stratford, driving drunk 2 years ago when the car plunged into the Big O' Plain Reservoir near the Highway S Bridge. 34-year-old Timothy Spindler drowned in the incident. Bowden was found guilty of his fourth OWI, sentenced to 3 years in state prison, followed by 3 more years of extended supervision. In sports, the Bucks lost in New Orleans. The Badger hockey team got a win. The Pointer basketball team won as well. You can check out all of that action, plus the high school scoreboard and today's schedule on our website at WSAU.com. The weather forecast, sunny and cooler today with a high of 26, an overnight low tonight of 12, partly sunny tomorrow, high of 37. For Monday, milder, partly cloudy, a high getting up to 42, and then Tuesday, cloudy, a mix of rain and snow, and a high of 35. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
Gary, have you heard about this new magic stock market calculator?
Magic what?
A New York PhD mathematician has invented what he calls a magic stock market calculator. It's making thousands of people across the country a lot of money.
That sounds a little...
I know. I was skeptical at first, but then I checked it out. It's actually based in solid mathematics. Plus, it turns out employees at some of the top money management firms on the planet are now using this guy's magic calculator. People at Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Wachovia, Morgan Stanley, and UBS.
And they're making money?
Tons of money. I've actually been using it, and it really works. See, it's all based on a precise mathematical formula that shows you how to time your investments as close to perfection as possible.
Wow, sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah, you've got to see it for yourself. Just go to MagicCalculator2.com. The inventor has a free online video that shows you exactly how it works and how you can use it for yourself. It's free, and it can make you tons of money. Watch the video now while it's still up. Go to MagicCalculator2.com. That's MagicCalculator, the number 2.com.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Merle Kelch. You have a magic calculator, right?
Yes. It's called
that
an iPhone.
That can time the market? Again, if things sound too good to be true, they probably are.
You know, folks, I'm not really sure how that... Somebody didn't call me about that article being on this show, but the magiccalculator2.com, I'm guessing, is just good money after junk.
I love the line where it says, watch the video before it comes down, like before the authorities take it down or something.
Boy, there's something magical. Somebody would actually have that figured out.
Yeah.
Tom, you had a question about something, and this is something that's near and dear to my son's heart.
Yes, for wrestling fans out there, of course, Merle's a huge wrestling fan. The WWE.
That's just because I'm the size of the wrestlers.
Yeah. The WWE, a couple of weeks ago, announced inauguration of the WWE Network. And what it is the wrestling organization, which is a publicly traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, is delivering their product, whether it be live wrestling events, whether it be pay-per-views, whether it be their entire catalog of matches and shows from years past, via the internet, via their own network, over portable devices. You can get it on Netflix and other sources. They're basically eliminating the middleman as it stands, the satellite companies, the dish companies, the cable companies, and charging, what, I think about $10 a month, and you're getting all the pay-per-views, you're getting all of this library of material.
Yeah, which a pay-per-view, folks, are like $40-$45 a shot just to watch them by themselves.
Right, and there's like 12 of them a year. And it seems like wrestling fans are going insane over this, that it's one of the best deals they've ever seen. And the WWE stock showed it as well, as their stock went up big time in the last couple of weeks.
Boy, in the last 6 months in itself, we take a look at that. Oops, stock. Oops, I got to push a button here. I just had it. Went from somewhere in the 10 to 12 range up to like 32 throughout the course of the last 6 months. Largely as they're continuing to build this sort of stuff out, and once the announcement came, it just jumped from some 22 range to now closing yesterday at 29.65. So, you know, you think about this, and I think we're going to see more and more of this starting to happen. Just as we saw, for example, oh, God, I can't think of his name now, Shock Jock.
Howard Stern.
Howard Stern, you know, left, of course, the National Airways, went on to, for a lot of money, went into the private airways. And in the same type of thing, it wouldn't surprise me to start seeing more and more firms like this. I don't know if you're familiar with WWE, but they were on, you know, they started out on you know, Turner's broadcasting system for a while. Then they went over to here, went over there. And their stuff on Monday night, that Monday Night Raw that they do. Folks, yes, I do watch this every Monday. Yeah, I don't know if my son's listening to this program, but I love you, son, and that's what we do on Sunday or on Monday night. We get together, we order pizza and drink Coke and watch WWE wrestling. It also allows me a lot of time to get a lot of my reading done for the program. But we watch wrestling on Monday night. It's our thing I do, so I'm familiar with this. And I like the idea because all of a sudden you saw WWE was on, you know, all of a sudden they're on the Sci-Fi channel and on different places searching around for cable deals. And I believe somewhere along the way they said, well, why don't we just simply create our own internet cable network, which is essentially what they did. And I think now is going to give them an enormous amount of leverage that they'll be able to command whatever type of a deal that they want to. Because now, rather than having to depend on others, they now depend upon themselves, and people are coming into their content directly. And other than the build-out, Tom and I were talking about at the break, folks, other than the build-out, there's nothing left afterwards. Once you have the digital machine rolling and going, you really have the ability to do some amazing things. And so now I think they've got a model that now they determine where they're going to go, and people are going to ask them because they've already have – you know, the numbers that they see on, say, Monday Night Raw, the number of people that watch them are just huge compared to almost any other program. It's just a brilliant move.
And I read an article yesterday. The suggestion is this could be a model that could be followed by professional sports leagues. The suggestion is that, like, the NBA and even the NFL can be looking at something like this and wondering how they can make it work for them. And down the road, this may be the delivery method of the future for live events, especially for live sporting events.
Yeah, I mean, to be able to just log in live and look at it versus having it downloaded to the cable. What do you think that's going to do with cable revenue sharing? And you have all these cable companies that just keep jacking up the price because they can't.
You've got to believe that the cable companies, Dish Network, and those folks have got to be going crazy over this. That they've got to be pulling their hair out, going, "How are we going to fight this?"
Yeah, because you know, granted, the cable companies still have the internet lines, where they can, you know, certainly charge for content. Matter of fact, we're starting to see that now that Netflix is actually having to pay, I believe, Comcast because. Netflix is having so much through our broadband going through the lines that they're now having to start paying the companies. We possibly see that. Remember, the cable still controls a lot of that sort of stuff, but we have multiple choices with some of those with the wireless, the satellite feeds, et cetera, that are coming up.
But they suggest,
but at the same time, they're losing all the advertising revenue.
They suggested that Dish, like the satellite companies that basically have the pay-per-views for wrestling, they get a big chunk of that pay-per-view money, the $45 or $50 that the consumer is paying.
Right.
A big chunk of that goes to the WWE, but a big chunk of that goes to the satellite companies that are providing, you know, the delivery method.
Sure.
That's going away for them.
Yep.
That's a big chunk of money.
And what's interesting, though, is that Charter will still have to deliver the content for those of us that are in Charter and want to sign up for WWE. Charter still has to create the bandwidth for that information to come through. We may very well see that you're going to start seeing Charter, AT&T, you know, it used to be the old Hughes dishes. They got the new name. I think it's Exceed or Excite or something like that as the new satellite dish that comes through. You know, we might start seeing that those companies are going to charge for bandwidth for a lot of these different programs to offset some of the revenues. But I think it's fantastic. You know, I love innovation in America, and the innovation in here simply says we're going to cut out the middleman. You're costing us too much money. And with the Internet and their own programming, it's now coming in. So watch for other companies.
You see Vince McMahon play a character on TV, you think he's a buffoon. He's a pretty smart businessman.
Absolutely is. You think about it. He owns the most shares of WWE and just keeps watching the thing go up, and he keeps building. They keep building the man's storybook.
And somebody suggested he had enough money to bankroll his wife in two failed runs for the U.S. Senate from Connecticut to the tune of like $97 million.
Yeah.
715-845-2155, the number to call if you have a question for Merle here this morning. Give us a call. Let's go back to the Crimea a little bit, because I was reading the story about commodities and how the situation in Crimea is going to affect not only things that we might expect, like oil, gold, and wheat, because Ukraine is one of the biggest wheat producers in Eastern Europe, and the fifth biggest in the world from what I'm reading here. But a couple of other things, a couple of other commodities that are going to be affected by the situation in Ukraine if it keeps going the way it is, palladium and potash. Not something we normally think about here on the program, but Russia is the world's largest producer of palladium, and together with Canada and Belarus is estimated to account for a little over two-thirds of the global capacity for potash, which is a chemical compound used primarily in fertilizer. So if Russia gets involved in military conflict that is going to engulf that region, the suggestion is that commodity prices involving stuff that comes from those regions is going to be affected. And I don't think there's any question about that, right?
I mean, look at the cost of the price of oil. It's already bouncing up as a result of this. And I don't know that any price of oil is actually coming down any place, but just the fear of some of the pipelines coming from Russia down in through that part of the warm ports is having an issue in the future markets just of oil. But the commodities are having a problem, and they are bouncing up. So we could have a little bit of an inflationary effect as a result of this. And so, and not only that, but globally, it's estimated already that things that are happening inside of Ukraine are affecting the emerging markets already, just because of the cost of interest and that whole bit. Additionally, we talked about it last time. There's a number of banking concerns. Italy, more than others, have a lot of financing inside of Ukraine. As Ukraine disappears and so forth, they're going to have to default on that. It's going to have an issue on their stocks and that whole bit too. So, you know, boy, Ukraine is a very small but sensitive area. They do a lot, and a lot goes through that region, folks. It's just going to be a ton of stuff. Folks, let me make sure I say this. The opinions voiced on this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Folks, this show contains forward-looking statements that may not come true. Securities Investment Advisory Services offered through HBEC Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. HBEC Incorporated and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies. And folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
All right, I'm going to catch you on this one because it's just off the top of my head and I didn't give you any chance to prepare. But of course, we're going to be hearing throughout the day about this airline crash, this Malaysian Airlines airliner that went down off the coast of Vietnam, went down without putting out a distress signal. So we still don't know what caused the crash. Was it terrorist attack? Was it a mechanical failure? Was it something else? And I imagine we'll find out later today. When a situation like this happens, when there's a major airline crash that takes a lot of lives, how does that affect the business plan and the stock price and the things of major airline carriers, or does it at all?
Typically, it depends upon what the reasoning was. Let's say it was a Boeing 777 that we know, one of the newer planes that came out. Rode one of the planes, pretty cool planes, by the way. Nonetheless, if it was something that was a design flaw of it or a maintenance flaw, you typically see if it was a design flaw from Boeing, you typically see Boeing take a hit. And the reasoning for that is because there's some sort of a pending lawsuit that's expected to come, so you see the stock take a hit. If it was Malaysia Airlines, again, they would have that particular hit. If it was terrorists, there may or may not have any sort of an effect on the marketplace. My guesstimation was if it was some sort of a terrorist attack, we would have already known that there was something that was launched just because of all the military applications that we have not only with us but with Japan and the area. We'd already know if there was a missile or something that was launched. I think we'd already know about it. If I had to guess, I'm going to guess some sort of mechanical thing.
Well, they don't know. Maybe a bomb on board. That's one of the things.
We would have heard it. you know, here's just because of what I know, and I'm kind of like the military buff stuff too. In America, we have this great big system in northern Wisconsin called the ELF system. I don't think I'm saying anything that nobody knows.
No.
That ELF system can hear dynamite being blasted in the water in Japan, as I understand it. I'm certain we would have heard something else being blown up someplace and caught it on some sort of a reading or a measurement somewhere around the world. Just my guesstimation.
All right, 715-845-2155. I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more. Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch back in a moment here on WSAU.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by FeedThePig.org.
Well, I finally did it. My student loan is totally paid off.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it either. I paid more than the minimum each month, and soon enough, it was gone.
So you're just giving up?
Giving up on what?
The life of luxury. Egyptian cotton, caviar Thursdays, designer everything.
What are you talking about?
Our plan. What happened to winning the lottery and mastering the art of the perfect mimosa? Hosting galas, wearing enough jewelry to require a bodyguard, vacationing in the French Riviera and then buying it.
I just thought maybe it was time to prepare for my future. You know, set some financial goals, make some smart investments, open a 401k.
Financial goals? Investments? A 401k? You are horrifying right now. Listen, if winning the lottery were easy, everyone would do it.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Are you thinking about getting your GED diploma? Well, here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a number of pep talks that can motivate you.
Sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to.
You know that feeling? People look at you and don't believe in you.
You want some gentle encouragement. Then you're on your way to your GED diploma and a better life.
But I know they're probably just a little bit nervous.
You can find it in yourself to take that first step.
You can improve your future.
You can do this. I know you can.
You need to start pushing yourself.
Now get your game face on and take the first step towards a better life.
Hurry up. Don't make me repeat myself.
Whatever level of motivation you need to get your GED diploma, we've got a pep talk that's right for you. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org for your pep talk and find free GED classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
And we're back here on Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch. I'm Tom King. Merle is here as well, taking your phone calls and questions, 715-845-2155. What else is on your radar over there?
You know, we have it here. An article just popped up that I saw, and I just found this as we're sitting here, folks. CNBC host Larry Kudlow will retire from his post at the end of March.
You're going to apply for his job?
I'd like to, but I don't think I'm smart enough. Kudlow was a former Reagan administration official, of course, in the economics department. Bear Stearns economist at one point in time and a senior contributor to the Senior Network. He will continue to be a contributor, but he's going to back down from his show. You know, I've had the pleasure of having dinner with Larry Kudlow two times in my lifetime, and just a brilliant, brilliant economist. And he wouldn't say jokingly, and he's actually got one heck of a sense of humor. He said one of the best things that ever happened for the President Reagan is they didn't know anything about economics. That way he could allow the new economic team come in and help point in the right direction of being a supply-side economist. But Larry Kudlow, fantastic guy, and will certainly be missed as we come along. You know, there's an article that's out there, and it's just a small little article talking about possible outcomes of the bull market's sixth year. And as they talk about this article, it's simply saying, well, if we take a chart and we guess what happened throughout the course of the last, there have only been 6 5-year bull markets, and we hit that 5-year mark anniversary next week. And with that, what's happened in the sixth year afterwards? And there's 5 possible outcomes. 2 of them stink. One of them is minus 42%. The other one's minus 21%. Both of those, if we look at those 2 years, were, of course, between 2002 and 2007. The sixth year being in 2008, which, of course, when the market stock market dropped down. And the other was ending in 1987. In both of those instances, we had extraordinary economic events that made those 2 years so negative. So my guesstimation is everything that we see, we're not going to have those unless there's something that's unforeseen we don't know about. And in those two things, we could see something being telegraphed. And so it kind of points that
they're talking about exchange-traded funds being a big part of keeping this bull market alive in the next year or so. And you're a big believer in exchange-traded funds, right?
I like exchange-traded funds, but I don't think they're for the everyday guy, which is something that's interesting. There's articles popping up here saying you got to have the cheapest stuff in the world. And oh, boy, I'm trying to spin through the article that gentleman did. Jeff Reeves talked about a thing called strength in numbers, way to protect yourself from profits inside of the bull market. So inside of his article, he talks about cut your costs because fees are cheaper. For example, if you have $100,000 invested at 5% for 25 years, the resulting nest egg is just shy of $340,000. But if you take the same $100,000 and you can cut the fees by 1% and make it 6%, you have $430,000, $90,000 more. Well, thank you for the math. I really appreciate that, Jeff. But here's an interesting thing. What happens if you have one that has a 1% higher fee, but it has a double the rate of return? Isn't that better? Sorry, just being facetious. So in here, one of the conversations that he talks about, as well as Mark Hulbert talks about his, is using exchange-traded funds because they're indexes. And inside of indexes tend to do the best when the marketplace goes up, and they're very inexpensive to use. And so if you're using an ETF, they're very inexpensive, very efficient in making the marketplace go up. Inside of this article that Jeff has done here, Jeff Reeve points out that he thinks that Warren Buffett is great because he says that Warren Buffett's so awesome, he knows he didn't even beat the S&P 500 over the course of the last couple of years. Well, he didn't talk about what's happened over the last 20 years, but nonetheless, ETFs can be a place for us to be efficient. But in the middle of reading this article, I thought to myself, Tom, how many people know what the acronym ETF actually stands for?
Well, we've got a few minutes here. Why don't you tell us?
This is my point. That's why nobody's using ETFs. ETFs are a wonderful vehicle, but I think they're used more in the financial community buying back and forth than any individuals. An ETF, folks, is what's called an exchange-traded fund, and it represents a basket of some sort of a stock or a commodity or investment vehicle, and we're buying a piece of that basket of whatever those vehicles are. The unfortunate part is that you not only have to understand what the basket is, but you have to understand how the actual ETF works. And I think that goes beyond the scope of many investors. And I'm not saying anything bad about any investors. But generally, the person who's out there, you're working hard every day and putting together, you're not going home and reading all the financial information and documents and new investment vehicles that are coming out there. So I think ETFs, though they might be good and they might be inexpensive, from an investment standpoint, many of us don't know what they are. And so with that, where do you get information? Well, you're going to end up having to contact the company or a financial advisor, and that kind of brings it back to having somebody help you make those decisions. ETFs inside of your portfolio are fantastic, but if you don't understand what they are, seek some advice inside of that information, folks. But an exchange-traded fund, you have the ability, literally, if you want to buy, like, trading places, if you remember that a long time ago, Orange Juice Futures, and boy, what were the brothers? I don't even remember the name of that movie.
I don't remember.
Anyway, so you buy Orange Juice Futures, and rather than having those actual Orange Juice Futures, you could find an ETF, I'm certain, that would represent Orange Juice Futures in itself. I recommend you do that? No, don't go do that. but you have that ability without actually taking physical control of that type of investment. Now, I said on this, buy gold, I would use an exchange-traded fund, and you do that through your financial advisor, folks, is my opinion. Do it through a financial advisor and talk about, I want to do buy some gold through an ETF because it moves so volatile. And if we've looked at gold, boy, we can see some volatility in that thing bouncing all over the place. And if you imagine if you're trying to actually buy and sell your own individual gold with that, it'd almost be, I can't say impossible to do, but boy, it'd just be a ton of work trying to keep up with the bouncing back and forth of gold. But if we have instead of an exchange traded fund, we can buy it and sell it intraday without having to hold the actual bullion, thereby the possibility of capturing some of those profits along the way could have been a lot better.
This article I'm reading is suggesting that ETFs in places like consumer discretionary spending, tech, and industrials are going to be the things to look at. By consumer discretionary spending, they call that one of the sweet spots for the last while. And they're talking about companies like Netflix and Amazon and things like that. The tech, they say, should benefit from companies stepping up their replacement of equipment, and industrials will gain from their worldwide reach. Industrial ETF top holdings include multinationals like General Electric, United Technologies, and 3M. They're talking about those kinds of ETFs going up from a sustained recovery in places like Europe. You agree?
I do agree very much. Now, the ETF is doing nothing more than just giving us a very efficient place in which to buy those types of sectors. Now, again, if we're going to buy those very sectors that Tom was mentioning, we have to make sure that we're buying them inside of a diversified portfolio. We don't just simply bet on that whole area, but as we talk about in this program, diversify, 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 and that certainly becomes another arrow in our quiver.
Can you buy an exchange-traded fund that gives you diversification?
Absolutely. They have exchange-traded funds that represent a basket of, say, a conservative portfolio that contains stocks, bonds, mutual funds, et cetera, et cetera. Also, you can buy unit investment trusts that do the same thing. You can actually buy mutual funds that have diversification built within the mutual fund.
Well, explain.
So you can buy that stuff all over the place.
Maybe I'm dense here. Explain the difference to me, then, from a diversified ETF and a diversified mutual fund. Which would be better for the average investor, and why wouldn't you go one way or the other?
Neither one's not necessarily better or worse. One is that the ETF, once it's set, it's set. So if it's going to have, I'm using a number, if it's going to have 20 different stocks in it and 10 different bonds, that's it. That's the basket. That's the basket of goods and services. Versus a mutual fund, might say we're going to be a conservative portfolio.
It's going to change, you're going to sell, they're going to buy.
They're going to have the ability to buy and sell.
Yeah.
Now, when the market goes up, you can't beat an index. You can, but, I mean, when a market goes up, the index is going to go up purely like the marketplace almost because everything's going to go up. The rising ship's going to lift all tides. But when the market comes back down, the indexes typically do a little bit worse because they can't get out of the way.
The rising tides are going to lift all ships.
Did I say boats or ships?
You said the ships are going to lift the tides. I think it's the other way around.
Well, it depends upon how big the boat is. If it's sinking, it might have, sort of like when I lay in a tub, the water comes up. Anyway, like manatees. Why is that when I take a bath, some people throw sea cabbage in the water? Just curious. Anyway, so as we go along, a mutual fund manager, for example, has the ability to say, well, it looks like the market's going to go down or this particular sector is going to be bad. They can pull out of that sector or increase some cash inside the portfolio to dampen blows and so forth. And you don't find that inside of an ETF or you don't find that inside of an index fund. And that's the major difference between the two. Otherwise, if you do a thing such as a measure of risk by, say, beta or something like this, you can probably find that an ETF and a mutual fund A are going to have relatively the same risk by measurement of beta, for example. But the differences of fees and when the marketplace goes up and comes down, they're going to react differently just as a result of how they're invested. And so you have to make a choice on which one's going to be the better for you.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time here. If folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
Monday morning, bright and early at 10 o'clock.
Banker's hours.
Well, the office actually opens up earlier, but that's when I get there for appointments. But,
Come
and visit with us, 3rd Avenue and Bridge Street here in lovely Wausau, Wisconsin. Stop by then, see if you can catch us in between appointments and grab a cup of coffee, come in, kick the tires, say hello. You can give us a call locally, 715-849-3600, or outside of the Wausau area, toll-free at 866-355-5100. Or find us online at KelchinAssociates.com.
All right, we're going to have you back next week, right?
We'll see you here, brother.
Fishing isn't for a while yet.
Nope, we got a few weeks for that one, so
we'll
be good.
All right, talk to you next week.
All right, buddy.
Merle Kelch, Kelchin Associates here in Wausau on the program. It is coming up on 9 o'clock, and we have the news on the way. That'll be followed by the polka shows. We've got Badger hockey later tonight. The Badgers and Penn State once again. Pregame show at 5:30 right here on WSAU.
In a world where your tires are your only connection to the road, one man, four tires, free air, an epic battle against underinflation, tire damage, and even tire failure. In the ultimate fight for properly inflated tires, the warrior gives his heart, his soul, to keep those he loves safe on the road. Tires will inflate. Money will be saved. A message from the Rubber Manufacturers Association.
Getting your child home safely.
Tap your heels together 3 times.
Is just a click away.
There's no place like home.
But making sure your child is in the right seat is just one of the steps down the road to safer travels.
I don't know how it works.
Find the right seat for your little one's age and size. There's no better way to get home safely. Know for sure that your child is in the right seat.
How can I ever thank you enough?
Get all the facts at safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. 2 miles long oil slicks have been spotted off the coast of Vietnam, the first possible sign of a Malaysian Airlines jet that fell off air traffic control screens last night with 239 people on board, at least 3 Americans.
Contact was lost with the aircraft 2 hours into its flight. The route is over the South China Sea near the coast of Vietnam during that time. And the government's website says the plane went off the radar south of Vietnam. Now, weather along that route was reported to be good at that time. The Boeing 777-200 is a long-range aircraft powered by 2 engines and was introduced in 1995. It's in service with many airlines around the world and it has a good safety record. Malaysian Airlines, too, has a very good safety record.
Fox's David Piper. Russian troop movement and reinforcements reported on Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula, where Sky's Alex Rossi reports.
I'm in a convoy now of Russian military personnel. We've counted, we reckon, about 100 troop carriers in all. If they were full of troops, you could be looking at 3,000-4,000 troops. I think that's probably not the case. But certainly a massive movement of Russian military equipment on the moment, at the moment on this.